Thanks for joining us here on Raider Nation Radio. It's the Morning Tailgate here on R&R 920 AM. Hey, don't forget, you can catch all our podcasts up online at lvsportsnetwork.com, as well as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all of their platforms, as well as send your thoughts in to the text line at 702-365-9200, especially the word cocktail, because when you do, if you write the word cocktail, text it into that number, you qualify to perhaps win this grand prize of this week's Summer of Fun from Planet Nissan, 4 nights, 3 day stay in Liverpool, England, or you just take the $3,000 payout. It's up to you. 702-365-9200. Text the word cocktail for your moment at glory. Marcus Johnson joins us now from Tape Don't Lie here on Raider Nation Radio. You can go up to YouTube, and Tape Don't Lie provides such a never-ending stream of consciousness and content of where the Raiders are at, roster breakdowns, situational plays, historical analysis, and more. And Marcus Johnson has been on the forefront of that since day one, and he comes to us here on Wednesdays at this time. Marcus, good morning. Thank you for joining us. Hey, when you start taking a look at really how the quarterbacks now for the Raiders and where Aiden O'Connell and where Gardner Minshew could be following minicamp, how do you feel like, you know, maybe that If this group is able to get the Raiders to 10 wins, what could that mean for the Raiders going forward in the next season? And what would it take for an Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew combination to propel this team into the playoffs?
To get to 10 wins, they got to avoid turnovers. I think not turning over the ball is very important. It's something that Aiden O'Connell didn't do, you know, at the end of the year. And Gardner Minshew does have a little bit of he does take more chances, I would say, than Aiden O'Connell, and you see him have more turnover-worthy plays. But, you know, that's one thing they got to do to get to that, even get to 10 wins. Those guys can't turn the ball over because they're going to be a smash-mouth football team that plays defense. And, you know, that's why, you know, with some of the offensive struggles, we'll see when we start, they get to start their running the ball, if they can get the offense going in a different way. But, you know, if they get to 10 wins and, you know, they end up, like, getting to the playoffs, I think the way to go with the quarterback position is how the quarterback plays in that playoff game.
All right.
You know, that quarterback just kind of just tanks it and just you know, play doesn't, you know, lets the Raiders know that they maybe are for sure a quarterback away. Then I think they'll get more aggressive in the draft and they'll do more things to move up and try to get the guy that they want, or even go crazy in free agency if somebody like Dak Prescott's out there, you know, or something like that. I think if they get to 10 wins and they get in the playoffs, it's going to be more about how that quarterback performs. If he plays well and they end up just like losing by a little bit, then that's fine. But if he, you know, if he just goes out there and tanks it, you know, looks like, you know, how Brian Hoyer did with the Texans when they made the playoffs, then you're going to see the Raiders get aggressive at the quarterback position.
Yeah, I can see, even if they do make the playoffs with this iteration of quarterbacks, I could definitely see that they're going to be back in the quarterback business, still back in the quarterback business at the end of the year, simply because you're always on a quest to improve, and especially at the most important position on the field. But let me ask you this. Is there any anticipation on your part, realistically, that the Raiders aren't going to be in that mode of operation at the end of this year in terms of seeking to improve at quarterback?
Yeah, it would only be if one of those guys has like a breakout season and kind of, you know, proves that maybe they could be a top 15 guy. I mean, maybe you feel like Gardner Minshew wouldn't be that type of guy at this point to kind of prove that. So, you know, if he's playing a lot of games, then you're definitely going to see them try to go for a quarterback next year at some point. But if Aiden O'Connell is playing the whole season and he's showing a lot of upside, you know, they might end up just rolling with him, because, you know, a lot of teams, when they see a guy who's top 15 or top 20, they kind of just roll with that. I mean, like the Bucks, you know, have Baker Mayfield. I mean, Baker Mayfield's not the greatest quarterback in the world, but, you know, he can get it done. And if the quarterback can show that he can be consistent and, you know, get better, then, you know, they'll definitely be in the quarterback market, but it won't be as something that they're going to be aggressive about. Like, basically, if they, it falls to them, or, you know, something that they like, or they have a chance, they really like a quarterback. You know, Tom Telesco, he took Brock Bowers. So, you know, if the quarterback falls to him and he's top of his board, he might take him anyway. So that type of thought process, we know with the GM, is there. So if Aiden O'Connell, you know, shows a lot of growth and has like a good season with a good touchdown interception ratio and a pretty good passer rating, then they might not be aggressive to switch quarterbacks, but it might just be something that just might come to them. But if any of those guys slip, or we see a lot of Gardner Minshew, I would expect them to be aggressive next year.
Tape Don't Lie on YouTube. Do yourself a world of good and subscribe to what Marcus has been doing for a long, long time. Fantastical breakdowns and TDL breakdown this current week. You broke it up between Thayer Munford and Isaiah Polamalu. Let's talk about Thayer Munford. So goes the quarterback. So goes the offensive line. Can Thayer Munford withstand the rigors of a full season? And where do you think this this leap could be for him? Is it this year to show everybody who he really is?
Yeah, I think Thayer Munford is a solid right tackle. You know, that's okay. What you see on film is that he's a solid player. I mean, for a right tackle, he gets the job done. You know, even in pass protection, there's some limitations that he has just naturally, athletically, that you're going to have to deal with. I mean, speed rushers are going to give him issues. You know, nobody's going to bull rush through him, though. He has pretty good technique, but, you know, just how slow his feet are a little bit. He doesn't have that the feet quickness to hang with speed rushers. But if you have a good quarterback who can understand how to navigate the pocket, he does a good job of surviving and letting guys pass by. You know, so it might be a difference between him and Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew. You know, sometimes, you know, since Minshew will hold the ball a little longer, he might get some sacks that Aiden O'Connell wouldn't get with Munford. But I think the big thing with Munford is how good he got as a run blocker last year. You know, he was ranked eighth in PFF, you know, was the guy who played at least 20% of the snaps in run blocking grade. So that is something that he is going to do really well for the Raiders. He was exceptional there last year. Had some really good games against good players like Kenny Clark and even Christian Wilkins, who was signed by the Raiders this offseason. He did pretty good against him as well. And that Wilkins historically wasn't known as much as a pass rusher as he was a run defender. That's the best thing that Wilkins does is stop the run. So for him to have that good of a run blocking performance against him shows a lot of his upside. And I think that's, you know, what the Raiders are going to lean on. I mean, you have Jackson Powers-Johnson and Colton Miller, and even Dylan Parham moving back to the right side, and Thayer Munford, and even Andre James in there. You're going to see those guys be able to, you know, create holes for Zamir White. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Zamir White's more of a straight line, follow the whole runner, so you're not going to see as much, kind of freelancing like you saw with Josh Jacobs. So you're going to see maybe a little bit more of effectiveness in the run game. And I think Thayer Munford's going to do really well there. That's something I'm not going to be worried about at all. I think the run game's going to be really good. I even think laterally and, you know, moving horizontally, he can run the wide zone game too. It's just more about the speed rushers and, you know, having to have that vertical movement. So that's a little bit of issues with him, but I think there's just a lot of upside with Thayer Munford. For sure.
Yeah, and people forget there's a body of work there. It's sometimes because he was playing that right, that extra tackle position sometimes. You just sort of it went by the wayside with fans, and understandably so. But when he got on the field in that realm, also at right tackle or at left tackle, the guy played pretty good football, and it's a pretty decent, you know, body size. So I'm with you. I think the Raiders are going to be okay at right tackle. Now, look, Marcus, I've been waiting to get to you with this because Isaiah Polamalu is one of my, you know, personal favorites. He's a guy that I just noticed early on, with the Raiders when, as an undrafted free agent a couple of years ago. It just, the body size, the body type, long and lanky, athletic. I remember, you know, really day one during training camp where they were putting them all over the place. So there's versatility there as well, and certainly upside since he got into the league. And I still think there's some growth there. That's possible. But you did a film breakdown of him. I feel like he's kind of a Swiss Army knife type of a player that can line up everywhere, maybe even play a little bit of box linebacker if need be. But what did the film tell you of Isaiah Polamalu, and what Raider fans might be able to expect from him now in his third year?
I think the main thing that he's a very smart player, and yeah. I think he's going to get on the field because of that. You saw him get more and more playing time last year because of his understanding of football. I mean, he's just a football player out there. Definitely has a great understanding of concepts, always in the right spot. You saw that a lot in the Dolphins game. The interception, he actually read the concept right. Jalen Waddle adjusted it, but since he read the concept right, he got an interception because the ball was overthrown. And there was those type of things that you see. You know, maybe the tackling has to get a little bit better for him, but that's more of him just breaking down. That's more of a technique thing than him actually being a bad tackler, because when he breaks down, he makes great tackles, and he does have a lot of upside at the safety position. And, you know, when you have somebody like Marcus Epps that might has 1 year left on the contract, and then you have Polamalu, who's probably be a restricted free agent next year, you feel comfortable if you had to move on from Marcus Epps and have Polamalu move in there and kind of take that spot, because I think that he has a lot of upside there too. And he can even maybe start eating into Marcus Epps' snaps. And even though they're big on Marcus Epps, but if an injury went down or something like that, you feel good about Polamalu coming in there. Exactly what happened in the Dolphins game. I mean, Epps went down, Polamalu came in there, and they were perfectly fine. It wasn't a drop-off or anything, and he was out there making plays and making tackles. And, you know, he made another big play at the goal line to stop Tyreek Hill on a fourth down. So, you know, there's a lot of things that he can do well, and he's going to make the football team because special teams, he's the gunner. He's probably the special teams ace on this team as well. So when you see those great AJ Cole kicks and, you know, the Raiders, the punt returners ain't getting a lot of yards, it's a lot to do with Polamalu being one of those gunners on the punt team. So he has that third spot pretty solid. I mean, he's probably not going to lose that. That's what makes the safety position a pretty interesting going into training camp and see how many safeties they actually keep. Nice. But I think he has a lot of growth. And you know, if Marcus ever went down or even if Morey went down, you would feel very comfortable with Polamalu coming in there. And I think they're going to find a way to play three safeties, especially when they play like somebody like the Chiefs that likes to pass a lot.
You can also follow Marcus online at silverandblackpride.com as well as on Twitter at TheMarkJohnNFL. Can you talk about a little bit about Marcus Epps and what are the things that make him so special? Because we see a lot of communication on the film, but what else is there on his game that makes his, what he's able to do and staying on the field and all those snap counts so sound?
I think one of the things is he's a leader for the secondary. I think he definitely keeps them together, keeps them on, you know, keeps them where they need to be and makes sure that they're all in the right spot. You can tell just the way he communicates with his teammates, and you know, if you see somebody do something wrong, he's the first person to tell somebody in the secondary. There's a lot of things you kind of see on film you really don't see in the broadcast after plays. He's always somebody correcting somebody, and you know, it's probably half the reason why Marcus Peters ended up being, you know, gone off the team, because you know, Marcus Epps is always talking to him after the play because he's trying to make sure everybody's in the right spot and he knows everything to do. And he really that's why he's a little bit of an unsung hero. Like, you don't see his interception, maybe the big plays that you see, but I think that what he does for Trayvon Morig is huge. You know, Morig just got completely better than he did in year one under Patrick Graham, and here comes Marcus Epps, and Morig took that big step, and I think Epps has a lot to do with that. And just you know, making sure Jack Jones is on pace, all those things, you know, Marcus Epps is really that catcher of the secondary. And you know, that's why you hear the press conferences and they're really shouting him out as somebody that is a leader, because that's really what he is on the field. So yeah, you're not going to see like a lot of the sexy plays that you see from other safeties, but he's a leader for the defense, and he really keeps them on track and makes sure that everybody's doing the right thing.
Marcus, switching over to the offensive side of the ball, Trey Tucker was somebody this offseason during the open practices and mini camp who just looked like a different football player, more explosive. And I know I had conversations with him last year, and you know, he was telling me that because of some leg issues he was dealing with, he wasn't able to get to his top end speed, which is pretty remarkable considering he was pretty damn fast out there last year. And the thought that he could take it to an even higher gear was pretty interesting to me. Well, I've seen the high end gear now. He's definitely that player, at least right now, and hopefully he stays healthy. But not only that, not only was there more explosiveness to Trey during the practices that we saw, but you could tell that he worked on his route running, more polished, felt like a more confident player out there. When you combine an added level of explosiveness with just a more polished, wide receiver who understands the position better in year two than in year one, what kind of expectations do you have for a Trey Tucker in this offense?
Yeah, my expectations for Trey Tucker are pretty high, because I think Trey Tucker does a lot of great things on the football field, you know, and even as a wide receiver, he does a lot of savvy things. And I think his main issue was always going to be kind of how he could work out his route running, just because he showed a lot of stiffness, a little bit of stiffness coming out of college. And, you know, especially since he played slot in college, it felt like that maybe that's something he couldn't do. So you wanted to know what his upside or what his, you know, his ceiling actually was. But when you put him outside, he has a great release, and he eats really hard to stop in press coverage, which makes it even tougher when he's very explosive and that he can just run past people, especially if you do press coverage. I feel like if you do press against him, you see Trey Tucker outside, you should just do a go route, because he's probably going to get past the guy. I mean, that's how great his release is. And if we can add in a little savviness with his route running, he's going to be hard to stop, because he's so fast, so a lot of even – you know, corners last year, he was able to kind of get away with some of the maybe the extra steps in his route running because he's so fast and guys would have to back off and get into what they call like a side turn, something they'd like to do in cover three. And he could just, you know, kind of change directions and, you know, get open with those guys running backwards. So that's something that if he can even get better at that, he's going to be a very dangerous player, especially, you know, him working out with Aiden O'Connell a lot and kind of getting that chemistry that they have. I think, you know, O'Connell showed a lot of anticipation towards him at the end of the year. So you can just tell that they have some chemistry there as well. And he does a lot of little things. Like, he'll come back to the football. You know, he had a rep against Patrick Surtain last year against the Denver Broncos where Surtain was all over it, but he was able to come back to the football and didn't let Surtain get in front of him. So a lot of small things that he does as well. And I think the thing that, you know, I posted on Twitter the other day, he will block. He is a strong guy, too. Mm-hmm. And that's why you can't press him as much. And you can see his physique, how strong he is. So he has a lot of upside to me. And, you know, I think that you might see him get more targets than people expect. And I think you might see him on the field more often than people expect, especially when they're in 12 personnel, because he'll add speed to those play action deep posts. And, you know, like I said, he can block in the run game, too. So he can come down and you can bring him inside. He can crack on safeties and make some good blocks. So I think there's a lot of upside with Trey Tucker.
Yeah, and that was going to be my question. With the 12 personnel, and especially if there's a lot of intentionality with Bowers and Mayer, which wide receivers could benefit the most out of this?
Yeah, I think Trey Tucker is going to kind of benefit the most out of this, in my opinion, because I think at the end of the day, I think Luke Getsy still likes to go vertical, and I think his ability to block and have that toughness, and so you could be in that type of personnel, you could still run the football and feel very comfortable. I think Trey Tucker is going to get in there. You know, I know Jacoby Myers has that same type of toughness as a blocker as well, but he doesn't have the speed that Trey Tucker has. And if Trey Tucker can improve as a route runner, that's why I think you might see him start to eat into to Jacoby Myers' snaps even early on. He might even win that job as the second wide receiver because I think that he's just so tough. And, you know, just somebody that AP will like a lot. You know, AP even sat him out during this press conference because it's just that toughness that he brings. And he just, as a wide receiver, especially being that small, is something that will get him on the field. So I think when you get into 12 personnel, you're probably going to see Devontae Adams, and it'll be a switch of him and Jacoby Myers, but you might see more Trey Tucker than Jacoby Myers. And when they get into more 11 personnel, I think they'll probably move Jacoby Myers more into the slot a little bit and work him there and allow Trey Tucker to work outside.
You know, I wanted to ask your thoughts on some comments from Tom Brady where he talked about how quarterbacks coming out in either high school or college that are entering the NFL are he feels like they're going backwards. He used this quote saying that coaches are doing too much to try to control quarterbacks. They're not teaching and developing the players with the right tools so they can go out there and make their own decisions that are best suited for the team. Are you finding that trend as well when you take a look at the quarterbacks that are entering the league?
Yeah, I think, you know, what he's talking about a little bit is that, you know, there isn't a lot of what I would say field generals right now. I mean, that was the word that he used when he made that speech. And basically what he's saying is, like, guys who are playing point guard. I mean, there's not a lot of, there's a lot of guys who come in here and they try to take the whole game changer versus game manager decision. But, you know, a lot of times in the NFL, you go through NFL history, the game managers are beating the game changer. So it's not really as much as, you know, going out there and just running around making plays and, you know, doing a lot of scrambles and doing a lot of those things. Those are more exciting for the fan to watch. But from NFL quarterback position, I feel like if you're a really, like, playing how Tom Brady talking about playing, you're pretty boring. You're pretty boring to watch. You're not going to be somebody that's going to do a lot of super exciting things. Of course, there'll be some mixtures because you're making plays at the end of the game, and those things are always exciting. But it's more about making the right decision. And a lot of these guys come out, they want to just be playmakers. They want to, you know, they run around or leave pockets early or try to do a lot of those things. Sure. Instead of just knowing the checks, knowing where to get the ball, get rid of the ball at. Like, a blitz is coming, you got to get rid of the football. I mean, the best thing to do as a quarterback, what they always say, is to get rid of the ball instead of trying to make a play all the time, because if you take a sack, you can fumble. And that's something that, you know, Trevor Lawrence is learning right now. I think Trevor Lawrence is learning how to navigate in the NFL, that you can't always make plays and you might end up fumbling or making something that might end up hurting your team instead of just getting rid of the football and making a smaller play, which you see like somebody like Brock Purdy might make. And then maybe, you know, people act like, you know, Brock Purdy doesn't deserve where he needs to be, but sometimes he'll make a little boring play that another quarterback you think is more exciting won't make. So it's more about that. These guys learning how to be more boring, in my opinion. They got to figure out how to kind of tone it down and learn that the NFL quarterback position is totally different than the college quarterback position. And I think a lot of fans get those mixed up. Two totally different positions. You got to play from the pocket in the NFL to become consistently great. I mean, you can be great at moments doing other things, but to be consistently great, you got to play from the pocket.
Oh, I love your work over at Tape Don't Lie. It's Marcus Johnson. Go up to YouTube, Tape Don't Lie, subscribe, and just feast upon all the great content and information. You do some great breakdowns with Matt Holder as well. What's in store this week as we start approaching, just about 4 weeks until training camp?
Yeah, so we're continuing doing the player breakdowns. We're actually doing a Trey Tucker today. We're doing Trey Tucker and look at Jack Jones. So I'll be dropping today, later tonight. So go be on the lookout for that. And like I said, we're just going to continue looking at players and looking at individual players. We're basically kind of just going over the whole offense and defense right at this point, and seeing who needs to get better, what they need to get better at going into the season, and then start getting into training camp.
Great stuff, Marcus. Thanks again for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you. At TheMarkJohnNFL up on X and Tape Don't Lie on YouTube. Interesting stuff about Tucker. In fact, they noted some pancake blocks that he was doing, and he was very notable as being more of a physical player than I even realized.
Wow,
Trey Tucker could be one of those guys that could challenge, for more targets, maybe as a number two wide receiver.
Well, you could put it all in the order that you want to. He's a football player that they're going to get on the field. It will be interesting to see how the play snaps gets dispersed between he and Jacoby Myers in 12 personnel. It makes some sense. As Marcus pointed out, he's a faster player, so maybe in that setting, that speed element would certainly help. You could also maybe, talk about the possibility of Devontae coming off the field a little bit more, getting up to his age. Because Jacoby Myers ain't taking a backseat to anybody.
He can do everything.
Yeah, he's a player that the Raiders really covet as well. It's a good problem to have either way. But I do think that Trey has a chance to be kind of that X factor for this Raiders offense. I want to go back to Isaiah real quick.
This
is a player who, coming out of USC, he's a little bit on the thin side, so maybe that distorts how tall. He's a 6'4", 215-pound kid. He's got a lot of size to him. So there's size, as Marcus pointed out, there's intelligence. But I think the story is worth remembering. This is a guy that wasn't even invited to the scouting combine. The Raiders found him, for fans who don't know how this kind of works, but each team is designated a certain group of colleges that are in their region that you could bring to your facility, above and beyond your personal 30 visits.
Right. It doesn't above and beyond. It doesn't necessarily have to count against that.
Yeah, it doesn't count against it. It's your territorial guys. Now that the Raiders are here in Las Vegas, and which we're relatively close to Los Angeles, USC and UCLA are schools that are in that area now. So they found him in one of those visits. They brought all the top prospects that they wanted to from USC, those sorts of prospects, guys that, weren't necessarily at the combine or the Senior Bowl, or I have to check to see if he was in the East-West Shrine Game. But that's how they found him. They found him on one of those kinds of visits. And it's a reminder to anyone that's out there that you might get overlooked, but if you keep working at it, you're going to be found. You're going to get found, and your opportunity is going to come. And credit Josh McDaniels and Dave Ziegler. They saw what they saw. I know because I've talked to them about that during that during that visit, that regional visit, and they gave him an invitation to come here as an undrafted free agent. And the next thing you know, he's making the team, and his role has steadily grown. So even if you don't get the invite to the scouting combine, even if you don't get drafted, even if you're not getting the love that you feel like you deserve, just keep working at it, because great things can still happen.
Yeah, and that's also another good problem to have. You have a stacked, or at least you feel very strong about the depth in that safety room.
Oh yeah,
with Chris Smith and as well as Trey Taylor, that you feel like, all right, this is good. And it's like the stuff that Marcus Epps does so well as he pointed out, was the communication. But I wonder if that can be learned, if that can be taught, and if anything were to happen to Marcus, who fills in for that spot? And it's probably going to come down to Isaiah.
It could be Christopher Smith is also a really high intelligent player. That's he got by with that more than his athletic ability at Georgia. Obviously you mentioned Trey Taylor being in that mix, but the thing that Isaiah has always had, even if you go back and watch him at USC, he was there for a little while was there during COVID, there during a pretty decent year and then some down years. But he was always a consistent player at USC. And the thing that Marcus pointed out, which was noticeable in college and certainly on the practice field, of being in the right place at the right time. And there was one thing that I remember Q and I were talking about this the other day on his show, where he asked, because I had mentioned to him at a practice, man, this guy, Isaiah, keep an eye on him. And so a couple of years later, just the other day, he's asking me, you know, what was it? What was it that really caught you? And I'll never forget this one sequence where he wasn't where he was supposed to be. And the coach, the DB coach at the time, pulled him aside, and you can hear him barking at him a little bit and in no uncertain terms telling him that he messed up and let's not have that happen again. Well, the very next play, he makes a big play. Tips a ball away. And the coach is like, that's what I'm talking about. Nice. So it was one and done. You tell him one time where to be, and he messed up in the previous play. He didn't let it happen again. In fact, he went out and made a nice play on the very next rep. And I was like, those are little things that that you watch for and you want to see. Did you hang your head in that situation? Did you repeat the mistake? Because that happens as well. Are you just not getting it? What's the deal here? Or did you take the information, even though it might have been told to you fairly harshly? Did you forget about how it was said and just focus on what was said? And did you go make the improvement? And that's what Isaiah did, and it was really noticeable that day. And I just think he's got a bright future. I don't know what the role is exactly, whether he's a starting player or that Swiss Army knife that I was talking about, where in the three safety look, you could put him everywhere. 6'4", you could go down and play by the line of scrimmage as that box linebacker, because he's tough, too. He's really tough. So those are stories that I really love to write about and to talk about, and he's certainly somebody to keep an eye on.
All right, it's Raider Nation Radio, the morning tailgate here on this Wednesday morning. Don't forget to send the word cocktail to 702-365-9200. Text it over, 702-365-9200, for your chance to win and qualify for the Summer of Fun, brought to you by Planet Nissan.
Yeah, so Clay, it looks like I dodged the bullet. Remember I told you, I got the indicator light on, the dreaded indicator light on yesterday with car. Woke up this morning, hoping that overnight nothing else happened. It didn't happen. Dodged a bullet. For now, anyway, saved some money. But boy, I'll tell you what, anytime those darn lights come on, it just seems like, rather than lights or warning signals, just put dollar signals there, because invariably it's going to cost you some damn money to get whatever it is fixed. And sometimes those guys in those at those car places, they'll find other issues to deal with. You end up always spending more money than what you bargained for, is the point I'm trying to make. And it always drives home the fact that money is so important. And sometimes we're coming up a little bit short. And maybe you're in that predicament right now. Maybe you need $500 to $5,000 to get you through, to pay a bill that's coming up, to go take your vacation, whatever the case might be. If you're in that situation and maybe your credit cards are maxed out, maybe your credit isn't where it needs to be, don't worry, don't sweat it, don't even lose any sleep about it, because the experts over at LendingStore.com have helped millions of people over the last 20 years who needed cash quickly, and all credit types are welcome. Now cash is as close as your phone and as soon as tomorrow. When you need cash, you need it now. So why wait? Go over to LendingStore.com. Let them help you find a lender that can get you $500 to $5,000 in your pocket, in your bank account, as early as tomorrow. Just go to LendingStore.com for all the details.
It's Vinny and Clay on your Wednesday. Let's go out to Las Vegas with Raider 66. Good morning to you, sir.
Hey, good morning, guys. How you doing today?
Excellent. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Yeah, I've been busy with work, so I've been absent. But, when stuff like this happens, it seems like every week now we're losing an icon from when I was a kid. It's just really sad. And Willie Mays was just something else. I mean, he had the basket catch. He was fast. He was powerful. He played defense. He had the five tools. He was one of those five-tool guys.
Oh, that's right.
And I had a – I'm sorry?
No, you're right. Before they even had the word five tools, he was the guy.
Exactly. Exactly. It was crazy. And I had a brief encounter with him on a golf course. My buddies and I used to play all around the Bay Area. And one day we were teeing off and we're coming up to the green, and there's a bunch of guys up there, older gentlemen, and you heard this laugh, and it was like, that sounds familiar. And it was a public golf course, so you're used to 4-hour rounds. So you're waiting around at the next tee box. So we're waiting around, and I'm like, that's Willie Mays. And I was playing with my buddy Tony, who's a huge Giants fan. So we were just like, this is incredible. So we're watching him through the front nine. You're like, man, he doesn't play, golf that well for a guy that swung the bat that well. You'd think he'd be a better player. Well, I think that the, what do they call it? When you bet on the golf course, I think the odds doubled in the back nine, because in the back nine he came alive. He was just a demon. I think he was sandbag in the front nine, and he cleaned him out in the back nine. It was pretty funny, but that was pretty cool playing behind a legend like that. But I mean, the numbers. A lot of kids nowadays, you know, don't know Willie Mays. They never saw him play, but a lot of them saw a couple of guys named Ken Griffey and Barry Bonds play. Mm-hmm. Those two guys wanted to be like Willie. So when the best players of your era want to play like this guy, you know he was pretty good. How good was he? He played 22 seasons, and he was in 24 All-Star games. You say, how in the heck can that happen? Well, back then, some years they had two All-Star mm-hmm. games. The second one was a fundraiser because, as you guys mentioned earlier, the players really – the pensions and stuff like that weren't the same. So Willie would just be there. And he starred at 18 All-Star games, which is a record. He had a string of 13 straight seasons where he had 70 or more extra base hits. There is no other player in baseball history that has 13 such seasons, let alone in a row. The guy was absolutely incredible. And he lost a couple of years to the Army.
Yep.
He went in the Army in 52 and 53. And the year he got out, 54, he was MVP. So how good and how much more could his stats have been? And he's the only major league player with a 300 or better lifetime batting average, 3,000 or more hits, 300 or more home runs, and 300 or more stolen bases. But, you know, when you've got icons of your era, Ken Griffey and Barry Bonds, Bobby Bonds, rather. No, Barry, yes, I was right the first time. Wanting to be like this guy. And Barry was his godson.
Yep.
Bobby and Willie were very, very close. So it's just amazing, and it's just so sad. And, you know, I just feel for the friends and family and all baseball fans that, you know, one of the true legends is gone. I appreciate you guys giving me the time to recall, and have a great day. Go
Raiders. Thank you. Thank you, 66.
No, but he was messing with those guys on the golf course, kind of sandbagging them a little bit.
I love that. Like, yeah, we'll see what it's like after the first, you know, front nine, and watch them go to the cart girl and start drinking a bunch of shots and beers, and
well, start
really
betting
just,
some money, thinking that that's how he was actually playing. And he's like, yeah, no, this is really how I play. Now I'm going to take your money.
Now I'm going to sit and watch, and I've been through this before. I'll sign all the autographs. We'll be slapping each other on the back, but I'm taking that money when we're all done.
Because I was just faking it.
Yeah.
And you fell for it.
What about when you were a Mets fan and when he joined the Mets at the end of his career for those Yogi Berra teams in the early 70s?
I mean, those are just...
He batted 260 when he was 42. I mean, you know, 211 in his last year, but, I mean, there was still plenty of ball
World
left.
Series. And people forget, I mean, people always remember I think he lost a ball in the sun or made some errors in the outfield, and that was sort of the lasting memory. But he actually had a pretty decent year that year.
Pretty decent year.
And contributed. So those are, for me, grainy memories, you know, more so just, you know, watching it back as I look back on the videotape. I don't have a whole lot of recollections of that. I'm not that old. But yeah, I mean, and for my dad, it was like, you know, his childhood hero, his high school hero ends up, I mean, he played on the, you know, once the New York Giants left for the West Coast, my father, you know, gave up being a fan of the Giants. And right after they left, the Mets came around, mm-hmm. you know, a couple of years later, I think it was. And so that occupied his fandom. So then for his hero from the New York Giants to then play for the New York Mets, his new team, and help them get to the World Series was something really special for my dad. You know, golf and baseball is pretty prevalent, you know, and a lot of players play.
Yeah.
One of the funniest stories, it was a little bit related to golf, but you'll understand, you know, after I tell the story. But there was this player, Robert Fick, who played for the Washington Nationals, and who was the great Cincinnati Red Dodger?
Oh,
player,
that guy was pretty much like should have been the commissioner of baseball
for the Cleveland Indians manager.
Oh, yeah.
Come on, who am I talking about? Anyway, so Frank, the first black manager in baseball. Anyway,
MVP in both leagues.
Yeah, and gosh darn it,
what the hell? What's wrong?
Look it up. Look it up as I tell.
I'm afraid to, because as soon as I do, it's like there.
No,
he
go
is.
Ahead because we got to get the first
Frank Robinson. Frank Robinson, of course.
Yeah. So Frank Robinson is the manager of the Washington Nationals. You know, and they're playing an old RFK Stadium,
mm-hmm.
And if you don't know, Frank was the nicest guy off the field. Like, he used to come to Laker games all the time with his beautiful family. He'd sit right behind the press table. We'd always go there and talk to him. Greatest, nicest guy. But you put him on the baseball field, whether as the manager or the player, and he was going to drive a stake through your heart. That's how much he competed.
No doubt. When he was a manager, he was fierce,
well,
too.
Well, here we go. Frank is Robert Fick's manager with the Washington Nationals, and he was notorious, Frank, for fining players for silly mistakes, lack of hustle, mm-hmm. all these types of things. So Robert Fick's telling a story about how he's a left-handed hitter, and he pulls it down the line, right? And he's thinking, there's no way that this is going to be a fair ball, right? He goes, so I'm kind of like just lagging. I'm half-assing it going down the first base because I know that I'm just going to go right back to the batter's box to take my next swing. Lo and behold, it got caught in the wind or something, some crazy. All of a sudden, it heads into right field, ricochets off the wall. He goes, and I'm over there standing at first base. I should probably be at, for sure, second base.
For sure, second base.
There is a chance I could have been at third base, yeah. Right? Had I just been hustling, like Frank always wants us to do. He goes, and all I'm thinking about at first base is I'm going to get my butt chewed out when I get back to the dugout. He goes, I wanted that inning to last forever because I knew
right.
that the first person that I saw when I got to the dugout was going to be Frank, and he was going to be – Frank Robinson was going to tear me a new one, and there was going to be a fine involved. You know, and he was a Southern California kid, so he spoke like a Southern California kid. So now I'm over there, man. I'm just sweating.
Dude.
Come on, man. This inning needs to go longer, you know, and – finally, the inning does end, and I'm just walking as slowly as I can to the dugout because I know what's coming. And sure enough, earful, fined, and he's like, you know, that was one of many that I got, and all the players, you know, got fined that year. And so the next question was, you know, well, if you guys got all fined, what did Frank do with all the money? He goes, I don't know, man. He goes, but one day he showed up with this sweet set of golf clubs before a road trip. And we're all thinking, did he use the fine money to go buy himself? He showed up with the sweetest set of golf clubs, dude. It was
and Frank Robinson, when he was a manager, and he would go and dispute calls. He was one of the only managers that could get a call overturned. Because he knew the rules inside and out, and some of them were ones that he helped write.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Frank Robinson was not just a master of the game. He was a professional, like a professor of baseball.
Yeah, he was. And really, he was an MVP of both leagues, mm-hmm. right? I think he might be the first one. I don't know who else has come
switch
around to do that. He was just a great player and – you know, right there with Brooks Robinson and the Orioles, but also with the Cincinnati Reds. I think he played a spell with the Dodgers. I think by that time, you know, it was probably toward the end of his career. But that's a name right there that I think gets lost a little bit. Frank Robinson was a great, great baseball player.
Back after this, it's The Gate. All right, we are out of time. In fact, we're over time, so we got to break it right here. Thank you again for listening to the show. We absolutely love it. Your participation is so greatly acknowledged and appreciated here on Raider Nation Radio. Make sure you text the word cocktail in to 702-365-9200 for your chance to win this week's Summer of Fun, which is a 4-day, 3-night excursion out to Liverpool, England. For Vinny, I'm Clay. Have a great day, everybody. Rich Eisen, he's next. See